Dear friends, as you know, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, we are in the middle of 14th chapter, where a topic that is very important for the actual practical spiritual life, to understand how the bondage actually functions in us, to make us aware of the various strands of the bondage and the various ways in which it has penetrated in our psyche and in our actions. It is very important. It is also somewhat difficult to grasp because of the subtlety involved in it, and because we generally do not think that this is pertaining to something very important in life. It is certainly very important because it is a very big psychology. This particular chapter, as the whole Bhagavad Gita actually, is apart from being a spiritual treatise, a religious treatise, it is more importantly a psychological treatise. It deals with the psychology as well as psycho-cybernetics, the psychological manipulation, so that our spiritual life is put on right track, handling of the different things that arise in our mind. As this great saying goes, that one is bound by the mind and is freed also by properly exercising the mental abilities. The Sanskrit saying is that mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayoho, that mind is the prime cause of the bondage and also of liberation of humankind. So we were seeing the three different forces or three different types of materials which we feel in our life. This is a science that is based on one's experience. Our experiences have been properly categorized, understood, and then a connection has been found in them. And then the names Sattva, Raja, Tama, they are given to the different tendencies in us, different ways the mind functions, different ways in which our whole personality and the outer world, it combines together. When we say I and the world, there is this I and then world, but it is a dynamic situation there. Not that what is I is certain and what is world is certain. It is a constant interaction that temporarily defines the place what is occupied by I and the place occupied by world. Like if you are in a plane flying, your position is continuously changing. Where are you right now? You cannot really tell. They tell a funny story of an aircraft that was just built experimentally. It was supposed to be very fast, But it was not tried actually. So when Pilate was asked, will you take a chance? We really do not know how fast it goes. Will you like to experiment? He said with his adventurous spirit, okay, I will give it a try. And he started from Seattle, and then after about half an hour he was talking to the control room in New York. Oh my, it goes so fast. And then after about another 15 minutes or so, he was talking to a tower there in London, the control room in London. And in just a few minutes, he was connected to Moscow. And he couldn't believe, what is this going on? He said, oh my Lord. And he heard, yes my child. So, it is going so fast. So, the position is continuously shifting, you see. So similarly, where the I and the world, they are, it is very difficult to say. So, therefore, this is a very dynamic situation. And this sattva, rajas, tama, the tendency that gets characterized by happiness, serenity, benevolence, the desire for knowledge and purity and all that. That is one aspect. Then the desire for activity, following certain desires, the desire-driven activity, and that is called rajas. And that part where one feels stupor, laziness, irritation, quarrelsome nature comes up, everything you like to criticize that day, when that or that time, when that tamas is rising up, then normally otherwise a good person also will start criticizing everybody unnecessarily. That, hey, why these people are doing like that? Hey, they should be all killed, and so forth. But that is due to this tamas. And we have to see how these function in life. There are three strands of bondage. And last class, we saw that even the good is good, but it is a good bondage. One person was criticizing politicians, that, oh, you see, they are all... Then somebody told, but he said that all of them are donkeys. Mm-hmm. Then one of them said, no, but he is a good man, he is a good politician. Yes, he is a good donkey. So it is good, but donkey after all. So it is, they all three are bondages. Even though some bondages are good, and need to be cultivated to overtake the worst ones. Not that it is bondage, but that at the relative plane we have to cultivate it too, to suppress the worst bondages, that is rajas and tamas. They are much worse. And so sattva needs to be cultivated. But while cultivating, we should be also aware that this too is bondage. It was told, it binds you by the attachment to pleasure, attachment to knowledge. Now compared to the other attachments, this is better, but again it is bondage. So, it is a better bondage, that's all. And then we saw that how rajas binds. It binds by making us attached to activity. And the desires come up, and then those desires propel us in action. Now, many times what happens is the desire-propelled activity stops. But the activity doesn't stop, the propelling stops by the desire, but then it becomes self-propelling. The attachment to activity itself keeps on propelling you. The attachment to action is not quickly understood because it is so ingrained. Many feel it when they have nothing to do. When the activity that they are busy with always, it is suddenly taken away from them, then they feel sort of such a terrible oppressive sense of vacuum. I know many cases that after retirement a person gets into that kind of situation. During the working days that person has, they are accustomed to work. Now the time, after all things change, the time for retirement comes. Now as the person retires, then it becomes a big vacuum. The work had such a big stranglehold on that person that now, because there is no work, the person becomes almost mentally sick, a mental wreck, so depressed, because the feeling comes that so I am not wanted, sense feelers everywhere that I can do this, I can do that. But it's not really invited to do much work, so the sense of depression sets in with this thought that no work. See, when this person had work, and I can tell you that I know these such cases in hundreds. Why so? Because this is a general human nature, that you get attached to the activity. The work has a hold on us, and thus when that person is working, is always complaining about work, that it is so much work that I have to do, I have no time at all, constantly busy. I will attend to all these things once I retire. Let me be retired. I am looking for retirement. Once I am retired, I will put all my energy into building up my spiritual life. It is very far from truth that as soon as this person is retired, is so depressed, doesn't know what can be done. The feeling of goodness or idea of doing something good gets covered up by the thought that I am not wanted, is my fate now, and so forth. The work is a big, big bondage. We keep on working and working and working. I know some people, we had a relation, a relative of ours was very fond of cleaning, always will start cleaning work. And we used to make fun of him that if there is no dust to be cleaned, groomed and vacuumed, he will bring some from outside, put there, so that he gets some work to do. And this is the case with everyone. We have a saying, and that if a carpenter doesn't get a work, he takes his saw and maybe starts cutting his own hand, because the work has to be done. We take something and start working on it. because the work itself creates a sense of bondage. It is it keeps on pushing you. You don't feel that bondage while there is ample work. But when that work is taken away from you, then you feel suddenly how attached you were to that work. So, it is like that. One gentleman I know, he was a lawyer. I haven't met him in last about 6-7 years or so. He said many times to me, about 20 years ago, that he wants to now transfer all his practice to his son and be free, and then he will devote himself to all the spiritual side. But he cannot give up. Not that his son is not doing well or he is not taking up the work. The problem is he cannot remain without work. He has to keep on working. And then they bring out a philosophy that work keeps you in good shape. It is true, work keeps you in good shape, but that is a big bondage really on you. It is not that you are voluntarily doing it. You go out of shape when there is no work because you are terribly bound by it. Let us feel this bondage of work. Desires propel us to work, and even if a particular desire that started that work, that desire may not be there, but the work is then self-propelling something. So that is called the bondage of karma, bondage of work, and that is the result of what is called rajas, activity, incessant action. This incessant action is coming not out of freedom but out of bondage. You cannot go away from it. You have to keep on working or thinking about work and so forth. It is, if you are told be peaceful, not easy, friends. And don't do any work, just relax. You were complaining anyway, is it not that you have too much work? But when you have no work, it becomes very difficult. There is the story of a king that he used to give alms to one fakir who used to sit there outside and meditate. And then some of the courtiers, they became jealous and told king that, look, you should not give free food to this person. By giving free food like that, you make him lazy. And it is not right. It sets a bad example. He does nothing, just sits there. Why do you give him food? The king said, okay, I will give to you also. Why are you complaining? Okay, you go there and sit. I will give you also. Nobody could sit. It is not easy to sit, friends. It is try. After 5-10 minutes, something from within keeps on pushing you. Hey, enough. It is, then meditation one sees that. 5 minutes, then you suddenly get a thought that, I have to make that important phone call. If I forget, what will happen? First, let me make that phone call and then sit for meditation. Then you immediately remembered. You sit for meditation and that particular nice important football game was going on. So meditation can be done later. That football game is to be seen first. See, it is not easy to sit quiet. We sometimes feel that sitting quiet is easy. Only I should have time. Suppose you are given ample time to sit, no work to do. Can we sit quietly? It is not question of having work or not having work. It is the disturbed, distracted mind that won't let us be quiet. And that is this Rajoguna. And later on it will be told that the result of this Rajas in life is suffering. The desires make us go for work, and every work then tires us and brings all unwanted results, making us suffer, making us miserable. So that is Rajas. Then how is the bondage of Tamas? The Tamas bondage is told how this Tamas arises. Tamas tvajnana jam vidhi, that is the 8th verse. We had read it last time, but let me, we didn't elaborate much on that. Tamas tvajnana jam vidhi mohanam sarvadehinam pramadalasya nidrahi tannibadhnati bharata. But no, tamas, to be born of ignorance and deluding all embodied beings, it binds fast, O descendant of Bharata, through inadvertence, laziness and sleep. More than inadvertence, pramada is a word for carelessness, insensitivity, all these things put together, not paying proper attention, and so forth. All this is combined in this word pramada. That is the sign of tamas. And how does it happen? Ajnanajam vidhi. It is exactly opposite of sattva. That there is the feeling of ignorance rises. Ignorance covers everything, and it is a thick covering there in tamas. So whatever, even those activity due to desire, that is also not manifesting. It gets all suffocated there. It is a state where nothing is really happening but lot of irritation. It is when the traffic is flowing smoothly, or if there is lot of cars, and then it is not moving as smoothly. But sometimes it gets just stopped because of gridlock. Have you seen that gridlock situation? That no car can move, because it is when direction has green lights, green signal, they cannot go because the other cars are blocking their way. So they cannot go. These have red signals, so they cannot go. And when these again get the green signal, they also cannot move because there are other cars blocking them. So everything becomes then comes to a standstill, and special measures need to be taken to take away some cars in some way and make the road available. So in tamas it is like that. And not that there are no desires. Desires are there, but they are getting bottlenecked. You are not able to decide which desire should get a priority and put into activity, because it requires proper thinking to set the priorities. Because not that we have only one desire coming up, there are 20 or 200 or so many desires, countless. And then these countless desires, they are all at the same time trying to go ahead. And then what happens there? It doesn't work. Our mental and physical apparatus, it gets clogged. These so many conflicting desires, one pulling you in the right, another pulling you to left, and so forth. One tells you to run, another tells you to lie down, and what are you going to do? So that is how this tamas. So what happens there? Irritation. You do wrong things, you become angry, agitated, quarrelsome, This is the sign of tamas coming up. Without any reason, you scold somebody. It is said that the cat is angry, but it doesn't know where to vent that anger. It goes on hitting the claw on the wall or someplace. Because that irritation is to be put somewhere. So that is the situation in tamas, that the irritating nature comes up, quarrelsome tendencies come up. You don't want to listen to any sane advice at that time. You are still in kind of lazy stupor attitude. You want to just sleep or be in the bed. Sleep also doesn't come easy there. What passes for sleep, actually sleep should bring more tranquility. But this is just lying down because the activity is not possible. So you just lie down, waste the time. That is the sign of tamas. You make many, many wrong things, many mistakes. One speaks there what one shouldn't have spoken. You know, later on one realizes, I shouldn't have said that, and I knew I shouldn't have said that. But when the covering is there, one blurts out those words, and so forth. This is all called pramad in Sanskrit. A word not very easy to translate. Here it has been translated as inadvertence, but it is not just inadvertence. It is completely being disrespectful, insensitive of the situation, just not caring about the priorities. And you act in a rash manner. It is that feeling of being rash. Like one gentleman, he was going somewhere and was going fast. He had to reach some place, and his car somehow got stuck, as the nature of cars on a bridge on a river. So he got so agitated, what is to be done? He threw the whole bunch of keys, including the car keys, home keys, whatever. He flung that whole thing into a river. Now what did it solve any problem? In the same mind, it wouldn't have been done. That is the sign of tamas, that one does something rash without thinking. Then you later on say, at that time I was not thinking. And that is the tamas, not thinking. Sometimes from outside it appears like sattva, because in both cases there is no activity seen. Sattva, there is no activity because there are no desires, and the desires are almost gone. So you see this person quiet, calm. The other person is also not active, not because there is calmness in mind. There is lot of turbulence, there is lot of dissatisfaction, there is tremendous irritation, but nothing gets translated into any meaningful activity, that's all. So that is somebody who is calm because that person has finished the work. One Swami, he has actually written a wonderful book translating Shankara's commentary on Bhagavad Gita, and we used to watch him, always very calm. He was General Secretary of the Order, and in the morning his desk would be piled up with so many files and papers and this and that to be cleared. By the time at about 4 o'clock, he would just the desk would be all clean, finished. He wouldn't be working over hours, no. We feel that those who spend lot of time at workplace really do lot of work, and not necessarily. It is the lack of efficiency, lack of organized mind that makes you spend more time doing less work. It is in one school there was this idea that everybody used to do lot of work and claim overtime and so forth. The work was not getting finished. When the new head came there, he saw this and he said, give me some reason that why you are not able to finish the work within your office hours. The work doesn't seem to be much more than that. Tell me why. And then they told, no, it is too much of work. You are new, you don't know right now. See, it is in given time, it is not, we are not able to finish it. And then he took stock of situation and told them, I understand you have some pending these things, works. This is a real situation that I had witnessed, friends. This is that heads of the school said that this is, I will give you 1 month to clear all your pending things. You work as many hours you want and on this and this date. Now, you all have to finish your work from 9 to 4. You should not be sitting in the workplace from after 4 o'clock. You should finish your work from 9 to 4. If you sit after that, not only that you will not be paid any overtime, but you will be charged for the utilities that are being spent extra, the stationery and the utilities that you are using. You will be billed for that. And surprisingly, after that, everybody was finishing their work in 9 to 4 time. Why so? Nothing, not that the work is reduced, more organization, more efficiency has been put in there. Otherwise, it is because of lack of efficiency, a lot of energy goes away. And there is the story of an efficiency expert, and that in the government offices and all, people don't work. Do that because they get their money, their salary, their jobs are assured. So, the tendency is just to go on without coming on time and without spending much time in work. Many people are, there are too much of staff. So, government appointed somebody as efficiency expert to study the situation. Now, this fellow also is a government servant and the efficiency expert. He also started working in the same way. He went to that workplace and then asked the first person at one desk, hey, what do you do here? He said, well, I don't do a thing. Then he went to the next desk, hey, what do you do? I don't do a thing. And this efficiency expert writes in his register there, and on his notepad, duplication. To do nothing by you require two people. Duplication. So that is that is tamas. That just sit idle, be lazy, do nothing. So it is, and you get used to it. Afterwards, what happens? This person becomes useless. Really, cannot do any work. Because of this kind of habit, that any meaningful work becomes very difficult for this person to do. So this is tamas. You get attached to it. You get, if a person sometimes one says that why this person is holding you so much, well, because unless this person scolds and gets irritated and vents anger, cannot sleep, cannot sleep properly. So to get sleep, because one is attached to even that I must get irritated, I must get angry. It one gets addicted to those things. They become addictions to get angry, to get irritated, to get become intolerant, to throw things here and there and so forth. And so unless you do it periodically, you do not feel that sense that you have been living properly. So that is how the terrible bondage of tamas is in life. You don't have the desire for doing anything good in life. It is, hey, come on, there is some nice, that they are doing lot of good charitable work, will you be able to come? Those are, all these works make no sense at all. Did you not hear this reading Vedanta, that all good works also come to no result and so forth? Not that he is very particular in studying Vedanta or anything, but doesn't have that desire to do anything good. All good, you see only the bad side of it. One person gets cynic because of this tamas. You get attached to cynicism, you get attached to all those bad side of the things. So this is tamas. So, and it sometimes passes for sattva. Swami Vivekananda in one of his lectures, especially to the Indians, because Indians, they are lazy, and then they keep the picture, give the, instead of changing themselves, what do? They say that we are Satvika people. We are not that active like Americans or the Europeans. We like calmness. Not that they are really are calm, but lazy, and so don't work. But then to get rid of laziness, not easy. So instead of saying that I am lazy, I have to work to get rid of my laziness, they say, after all, what is the use of so many activities? They are not satisfied or calm, but that cover their laziness with such flowery language, that's all. So, Swami Vivekananda scolded this mentality a lot, and very scathing words, that we are poor, we Indians, we don't have the economic prosperity like the Western countries, because we don't work, and then we cover our poverty, saying that, well, we respect renunciation, what is the use of money and so forth. Well, do you really do it out of that saintly nature? Or just because you do not work, you do not like to work, somehow your poverty, you call it the spirit of renunciation. To become really renunciate, so Vivekananda said that a Buddha's renunciation has some meaning. Who had the kingdom, who had all pleasures waiting for him, that person, if that person says, no, I see through all these that they do not bring any lasting satisfaction to us, they only intensify suffering ultimately, so I reject them. But this fellow who has nothing, doesn't even have the possibility of having any of those things, doesn't work, he is lazy number one, and this person says, well, what is the use of having all these things, I renounce. Do you have anything to renounce to begin with? You have nothing, what renunciation are you going to do? So this idea of tamas appearing like sattva, that is a very common mistake. The sun, rising sun also looks similar to the setting sun. Both look very that reddish hue around them and all that, but they are at completely opposite sides. So similarly, tamas and sattva, they are not the same thing. It is the sattva needs to be cultivated by suppressing this rajas and tamas both. So then only one can become sattvika. So he says that how these three bind. Now in the next verse, all three are combined to show that all three are bondages. Sattvam sukhe sanjayati rajat karmani bharata jnanam avrityatu tama prasad pramade sanjayatyata. Sattva binds one to happiness, rajas to rajas, O descendant of Bharata, binds one to work, while tamas, by covering knowledge, binds one to inadvertence, etc. Now, one may feel so that I am a sattvika person, but and I am not having as much tamas as the other person has. Now the dynamic changing nature of these is being described. It is really a masterpiece. This sublime science of is presented with such poetry here, that and so much of actual applicability in our lives. See, at one moment we may be feeling that it is also that serene feeling, wonderful, the life is so good, I feel so much devotional upsurge, I am getting the concentration on Lord, and all those bad tendencies, and I have finally just thrown them away. It is just what is happening is that sattva has right now come up, but they come and go in cycles. Not that this feel, this is just a feeling. You have not assiduously cultivated and strengthened it. This feeling comes. To everyone it comes. Even to those who are say diehard felons, they also sometimes get the feeling of charity and being nice and being benevolent, and no, one should never steal anything and all that. And it is that good sense prevails in everyone sometimes or the other, but that is temporary. It changes suddenly. You will see a spurt in activity, or a spurt in the tamas, that laziness. They keep on shifting. One must be aware of this, that it is just because at one time one particular quality seems to be predominating, doesn't mean that the others are gone. They are just not manifesting at that time, that's all. It is in 24 hours one can see how many times these will be changing, unless one very methodically, assiduously, putting in lot of efforts, gradually learns to subside the other two, and then the sattva that manifests is a steady, steadfast sattva. So otherwise they keep on shifting. Rajastamas abhibhuya satvam bhavati bharata rajastatvam tamascaiva tamasatvam rajastatha. Sattva manifests, O descendant of Bharata, overpowering rajas and tamas. Rajas manifests, overpowering sattva and tamas. And likewise, tamas manifests, overpowering sattva and rajas. So this is a dynamic situation in life. And the three are coming alternately in life again and again. And this fact, this important thing needs to be kept in mind, borne in mind, so that we will not get carried away just by a little manifestation of sattva. Many times when it is actually, I have experienced it quite a few times, that a person comes here for the first time and then after that impact of that calmness of the situation here is very much liked, then listens to lecture, likes those ideas from the scriptures, feels that yes, that is what one should do, and then after coming out tells me, Swami, what a great thing, I am so fortunate that today I came here, I am a changed person now. That change doesn't last too long, you know, it is, again it changes, it is, that change continues till one properly directs that it is, see, change is automatic. Evolution needs efforts. And change is always happening. The whole world means change. Nature means change. There is nothing constant here. Change you cannot control, you cannot stop change. What one can do and should do is direct the change. Directing the change is possible when it is directed to one's benefit. And when it is directed towards the goal of life, then it is called evolution. The change otherwise is, well, it is happening. If you don't direct it, normally it will go take you to further downgrading yourself. That does not require any effort. To build character, you require efforts. To spoil it, just nothing, no efforts are required for that. It automatically happens. So therefore, these three keep on alternating in a person. Now, from this 11th verse, see, this is such a beautiful, so practical a science. How would you know that sattva is coming up in me at a given time? Can you see the signs of sattva before it comes? Can you see the signs of rajas before it comes? So that you know that something is coming and you can prepare yourself to tackle it. You can get ready to tackle it if you know it in advance. Like you have the spy agencies, that if some country is plotting against you, then afterwards, if you know, or when the attack actually comes, you get caught unawares, and lot of losses, defeats and all that happens. But therefore you have the spy agencies, hey, these are, you know, in all probability the enemy is there plotting attack on us, and so forth. So you now become aware, you counter it appropriately then. So therefore when sattva is manifesting, there are signs of it. One should know those signs. When rajas is becoming manifest, the signs of rajas are there. And tamas similarly. So the signs should be known. Like knowing the signs of earthquake, or you have the meteorological department telling that the hurricane is coming or snowstorm is coming, and so forth. So you get ready for that. It is no storm coming. You declare that there will be no school and so all these will be closed and so forth. Why? Because you already have a warning, and thus you avoid a big calamity. So this is how one should know what is coming up. Advanced weather forecast. So this is advanced psycho weather forecast, you can say. It is, we need, you know, psychological storms are much worse than the physical storms. So we should have an adequate warning of all these, and that will be provided in the coming verses, coming three verses, and then how they develop, that also is given. It is a beautiful picture, very much like the satellite picture that you get of the building of the storm system and all that. It is, so you get the how it is, the activity is going on. So how to look for that in our minds? What are the symptoms? Wonderful science. This is a unique scripture, friends, where all these things are given. In Vedanta also you don't see at too many places that this has been given with such penetrative analysis and so simple language. And we shall try, by the grace of God, to look into it next Friday. Any questions about today's discussion? Is the question yours or on the web? Okay. Please read it. Yes, she is reading that, then I will take your question.
When we meditate on self or God and happiness itself, bliss, knowledge itself, is this form of meditation binding God or our consciousness with the Sattvic Guna? Is there a stage in meditation beyond?
Yes, there is a state beyond it, where you go beyond all these qualities of God. You develop that those feelings through meditation to overcome the other detrimental ideas. But then if this is just for that, it helps to suppress the others. But in itself one has to go even beyond that to have the final freedom, emancipation and realization of one's infinite nature. Yes, one has to go beyond that. Yes?
How do we prioritize
our desires? A little loudly, please.
How do we prioritize our desires? How do we know what it means to it?
Yes, a good question. How do you prioritize your desires? Is it that you were asking?
Yes.
Yeah. So, it is not an easy task unless we decide the goal of life. What do we want to ultimately get in life? That all desires then can be arranged in the light of what will be helpful in attaining to that goal. We have to have a criterion basically by which to decide what has more priority and what has less priority. So to have that criterion, And we have to have the goal in life, that this is the goal in life. In relation to that goal, now you have a standard, that what do you think this desire will do to your progress towards that goal? Will it make you get there faster? Will it propel you towards the goal? Or will it obstruct your progress towards that goal? Not that initially your judgment about it may not be accurate. There may be many factors playing, but at least you have now a criterion to judge by. And then on the basis of trial and error, now you can prioritize those. For example, my desire to see a movie. Now, you see what you will be doing if you don't see the movie. Are there other better things that you could do with your time? If you have to see it, is that the only time that you have to see it? And what will it do to your mind and your life in general? And will it be in general helpful for your realization of that goal? Think about it. So this thought process needs to be made robust. That is the second thing. And deciding what is the goal in life. Second thing, and this faculty of thinking, discernment, that needs to be made robust, very robust, so that on the basis of that discernment, that this is right, I will do it. This is not right, I will not do it. This is has more priority, I will put it first. This has less priority, I will put it later. On the basis of this sense of discernment in life, that is in Sanskrit, in Vedanta, the word for that is viveka. And this viveka follows is followed by vairagya. And vairagya means giving up that which has lesser priority for what has superior or higher priority. So, but again this requires lot of practice. And the mind and the lifestyle has accustomed itself to set the priorities on the basis of likes and dislikes. I like this, I don't like this. And these likes and dislikes, they keep on shifting constantly. And so the priorities set on the basis of likes and dislikes lead to a terrible situation in life. And therefore, one has to change that standard by what is right, what is conducive to my reaching the goal, and that should get the higher priority. So by setting, having this equipment with us, equipment of discernment and the dispassion, one can then set the priorities very well. The great example is like Swami Vivekananda. That priority of what is going to be of help to realize my goal will be decided on the basis of this. And then once decided, I will do this because it is helpful to attain the goal. I will not do this because it is not going to attain the goal. So, this is how one has to develop that sense. And it is cultivation. Like you cultivate a plant, you may have a little tiny seed. Our Nancy is putting some plants there. So now, it may be just a little seedling to begin with, but you have to cultivate it. It grows. And that discernment is to be sown first in the soil of the mind. And then we have to practice it, that is cultivation. Then it grows, grows, and then it becomes a very robust thing. It is like that. The cultivation of this big tree, so it is very helpful to set the priorities. Yes, Abhijit?
How do we discriminate between real renunciation and fake renunciation? Because the tamas might be very tricky. It might trick you into thinking that you are actually renouncing, but you are actually giving yourself to tamas.
By results.
By results.
Yes, by results and by introspection. Our introspection can easily tell us that is it the out of sattva guna, or it is because of tamoguna. Suppose, for example, many get that idea of renunciation because of that some business disaster or failure in some other endeavor, then you get that idea, it is all useless, it is all meaningless. You immediately remember all the scriptures that, oh, they say that anyway the goal of life is God realization, so why should I have this? But it is not being done out of that feeling. It was because of certain failures that and because your head cannot really take it in, and now it is an escape route. That Arjuna's thing case is that is a classic example. That in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, what one reads is that kind of vairagya, that spirit of renunciation that Arjuna was feeling. No, it was not renunciation. He was finding an escape route from pursuing his proper legitimate duties. So, one has to really examine, and that is why we study these things. So that studying, understanding makes us aware that how to decide what is this attack of tamas and what is really the sattva.
Also, can rajas be invoked without inflating the ego?
No. It is not possible to invoke. It is a nice question that can rajas be invoked without without invoking the ego? And the answer to it is no. And the ego grows. It is better to have a healthy ego than a morbid ego. So instead of an ego of a tamas, better to have ego of rajas. It is like having the ego, I am a bad person, that is an ego. At least have the ego that I am a good person. It is a better thing, is it not? So ego is the last thing to go. So as Sri Ramakrishna used to say, that all problems go away when ego is gone. The corollary to that is that if ego has not gone, all problems also have not gone. It is that Sam says that when at the end everything will be all right, and if it is not all right, then it is not end. So it is, ego is like that, that when it is gone, no problem. If you say that ego rise if you try to have rajas, of course. But as if otherwise there is no ego, there is a worse ego possible. So therefore make the ego first, a strong ego, an ego that stands on a better footing. So that it is the cultivation of proper that ego, that is also a job that a spiritual aspirant should undertake. That instead of having that ego, I am a wretched fellow, I don't know anything, I cannot do anything. That is an unhealthy ego. I am a human being, I can realize God in this life. I am potentially as good as Swami Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna are. So with that healthy ego, then you can proceed ahead. So Swamiji used to say, therefore, that have faith in oneself first, then will there be the faith in God is the later thing. It is, you cannot have faith in God unless you have faith in oneself. So that ego, very good, come on, it has to be there, yeah. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिश्रिता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।